Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, sex is everywhere now, isn't it? On the billboards, on the TV screens, on the iPod, so you might have heard of a little thing called the internet. It's like a cheap product now, isn't it? Mass-produced, undervalued, oversold. So how can we better understand sexuality? And how can we make the link between our physical desires and our spiritual longings? You might remember Lisa Graham McMinn. She joined us a couple of years ago to talk about contentment. She's a sociologist and she's the author of this new book, Sexuality and Holy Longing. And she's going to help us put those two phrases together. Lisa, good to have you on the show again.
Oh, and it's very good to be back with you.
Yeah, this whole issue of sexuality as a sociologist must be a field ripe for study.
Absolutely. It's certainly something that sociologists look at, not often through the same kind of lens that I'm choosing to look at it, bringing my Christian faith and my sociological lens.
Yes.
But it's a very hot topic.
Has that brought extra challenges for you as a sociologist to then weave in a Christian faith aspect, a perspective that actually takes into account the spiritual?
It has been, although not such a hard conversation. Partly what started the book for me in general was teaching a course in sexuality and trying to find an appropriate text for my students that was honest to the questions but answered them or at least addressed some of the issues that would also come to us through our various faith traditions. And so writing it and trying to bring what does it mean for us to be people of faith and people of culture and think about sexuality well.
Let's define sexuality. Let's start off right at the beginning with some sort of bedrock definition of sexuality. What do you say it is?
You know, I'm critiqued often on my definition of sexuality because some would think it was too broad, and so here you go, though. Sexuality is something that is both embedded in our culture and embodied in our physical bodies. So it is the physical way that we respond to others and are drawn to others. But it is also something that our culture tells us how we're supposed to mediate and understand and express those longings that we have and the way that we act on them. That's actually very cumbersome. Sexuality is that which draws us to other people, most often experienced in cross-sex relationships. Not always, sometimes same-sex relationships as well, sometimes deep friendships, but sexuality draws us toward others.
Okay, draws us toward others. So it's more than any sexual act then?
Yes, absolutely, and that's where it, so often we just think of sex and sexuality as being the same thing, rather than we experience the world through bodies that are very sexual in all of our various interactions, and so it's much broader than just sex.
Yeah, so when you say that it's something that draws us to other people, of course, obviously you think about the opposites attracting, the male and female, but when it comes to friendship, you were saying, a friendship can actually be a form of sexuality or an expression thereof?
Yes, and this is what makes people rather nervous. But when I talk about sexuality as being something that is deeply relational, it's what reminds us that we're not full by ourselves. We are really created to be in relationship with others. Friends can be holding each other, caring each other, loving each other in ways that meet the longings of our heart to just be connected to someone besides ourselves. And so when I, you know, there's a woman friend that I do my backpacking with, and she gets me in ways that my husband can't. And so there's ways that when I am with her, she knows me, she loves me, she understands me. And that is satisfying an aspect of what I deeply long for. Now, I am very willing to accept the critics who say, you're not talking about sexuality anymore, you're talking about just relationships. Mm. But what I'm striving to do is to pull together something that I think has been ripped asunder, which is that sexuality is intended to be part and parcel relational. You cannot really have a healthy sexuality apart from relationships. Longings, again, the way I use it is to be known and to be loved and to belong. And that happens in the context of our families and our friendships and, in some cases, our church communities. And I wouldn't say our church communities are sexual, but that these longings are fundamentally rooted back in our sexuality.
Right.
That we are male and female, we are different, we need others to feel completely full. So it's not always about sex. Fundamentally, that's how we think about it, but it is broader than that. It's much more deeper and more relational than that, which partly is why I argue that people who aren't married can still be finding ways to find some fulfillment for their sexual longings.
Hmm. More and more that I think these things through, the more and more I understand that a Christian vision of who the human is totally changes our approach to a lot of these kinds of things. How does a Christian view of humanity change our view of sexuality?
A Christian view of humanity recognizes that we are made in the image of God. And some of the ways that gets talked about from theologians past, but also today, is that we best represent God in relationship rather than just by ourselves. So we are humans created to be in relationship, and we are made and carry this image of God that is precious. And so things that we do are also, there is a dimension to them that is sacred, that is other, that is set apart, that's different. So sex for an animal and sex for a person, as a Christian understanding would say, that's going to be fundamentally different as well, because our sexuality is broader and bigger.
It really does change the way we look at sexual activity, doesn't it? Because if we are actually made in the image of God, we're not just simply material beings who are just simply there just for pure pleasure or pure use or pure objectification.
Right, right. Sex matters. It has more of a sacred, sacramental nature people would speak of it in a sacramental term.
Yeah, okay. Well, speaking of sacred, sacramental, things like that, you've written this book based on looking at sexuality and holy longing. Bring those two together for us. What is the link between physical desire and spiritual longing?
I think of this, actually, that came about also in an interesting conversation with my dentist, my mouth full of instruments, and he's asking what I'm writing about, and he thinks those two can't be brought together. How can you have a holy longing and talk about sexuality? But they are so beautifully aligned together, because we are created with longings. God, in some level, knowing what choices we would make and that we would choose to walk away from God and walk away from each other, I think ingeniously made us as sexual creatures that always are longing to belong and to be loved. And so that longing is a holy longing to be loved by someone, to belong to someone, to be one with someone. And so our sexuality is understood as a holy longing that God put to keep us reaching out to others rather than, you know, drawing into ourselves in a way that would be death for us.
Yeah.
It creates a very different view of sexuality as something that is this great gift to humanity that keeps us stretching toward others and ultimately recognizing our longings will be met by God, and not even fully here on earth, but what we long for is there, and our sexuality keeps us aware of that.
Yes. We can look from one direction at the fact that as humans we are made in the image of God, so we look at God and look at us. We can look the other way too and look at us and then look at God, so to speak. What does sexuality tell us about God himself?
I think the creativity of God, for one thing. What an interesting thing to make reproduction this incredibly both pleasurable and intimate and vulnerable act that is required for people. That God longs for relationship. I think it tells us that about God, too. He desires to be in relationship with us, or that fundamentally God is relational himself, or God's self is relational. That God has thought these things through and designed a system that functions well for families and for societies and for individuals. I think it tells us a lot about God's very ingenious design of human relationships.
Mm. This is Open House. We're talking to Lisa Graham McMinn, a sociologist and author, written this book called Sexuality and Holy Longing. Theopenhouse.net.au has the podcast. We've got STDs. We've got sexual abuse. We've got pornography everywhere, unwanted pregnancies. As a sociologist and as a Christian, where are we going wrong from what you can see?
Well, the subtitle for the book is Embracing Intimacy in a Broken World. There is much about our sexuality that is broken. Where are we going wrong? It's a very complex and big question. I think one of the ways we go wrong is when we have separated out sex and said it's just something that's physical. It doesn't really have meaning. It becomes something that is consumable, that is objectifiable, and it loses its significance as something that is holy and draws us into this longing to be known and to be loved. And when we separate those, there are all kinds of ways that we misuse then. And we're seeking the longing. We just seek it in ways that further wound us and send us down roads that drive us actually away from relationship rather than towards authentic relationship.
So again, it comes back to that relational aspect. I guess when we think about sexual awakening, often it's the teenage years where everything starts to, explode. What are young people telling you about their experiences of sexuality, quote-unquote?
They're being Well, what the culture is here, and I'm not sure how different it is for you, but the culture is here. It's go explore it, figure it out, experiment with it. It's really not connected to things that matter. Be responsible. So certainly, and actually there is one voice that would say, we need to help our girls say no to sex until they're old enough to really know what they're choosing, because girls are so much more vulnerable to the bad outcomes than boys are. Boys are also subject to them, but the STDs, the unwanted pregnancy, all of those things are more so for girls. Mm. But they're getting a message. Partly the message is prove yourself sexually, go be sexual, you know, go have fun. It's interesting at the college level, there's a really great book by Donna Freitas that looks at how college students and the hooking up culture feel like that's the only way to even find love, that you have sex with multiple people and you hope that one of those hookups will last and you'll ultimately find love, which is such a backwards way of looking for love. Mm-hmm. But that's part of what they're hearing, that that's what you have to be willing to do, is to kind of put your body out there in hopes of finding love.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be very very much different from the culture that we have here in Australia. So how do you think we can help teenagers deal with that you know, emerging sexual curiosity that starts to happen, you know, age 12, 13, 14?
I think we can do it as parents. We can also do it as churches, and we can do it as civic communities. Some parents are comfortable talking about sex. I would say the majority are not. So finding, first of all, where do I get the resources that help me have conversations with my children? And in Growing Strong Daughters, another book that I've written, I say those conversations need to start when your children are very young. Don't wait till they're 12 or 13. Our churches, there's a number of programs that are trying to get beyond the youth group, how far is too far kind of question, mm-hmm. to talk about, well, what do I do with the desires that I have? If you're saying to abstain and I'm not going to get married till I'm in my late 20s, what are healthy alternatives for me with my sexual desires? And if those conversations don't happen in church, they're going to happen in school and they're going to happen on the street. So allow safe places for the confusing and uncomfortable questions to be explored by people, you know, leaders who can not just get embarrassed or tongue-tied or give bad answers, but who can really help explore and think about what are appropriate touch and inappropriate touch, and what kinds of conversations should we be having about the longings and what to do with them. And then I think these can, in some cases, there's groups in civic centers that are trying to help boys learn how to be men apart from any notion that it means sexual conquest, and girls to be, you know, what does it mean to be confident, to have voice, and to feel good about who you are physically and mentally and emotionally. And so there's a number of organizations that are also trying to do that in our various communities.
Mm. I think back about you talking about the conversation we need to have in Christian churches about what young people can do with their sexual desires. That's a very, very big one. And like you said, very easy for leaders to get tongue-tied, to get embarrassed about it. But where do you even begin with that kind of conversation? What would you suggest for those people who come to you and say, let's have a conversation? What do I do with my sexual desires even though I'm single? I know that as a Christian I'm not supposed to have sex until I get married. What do I do? Where do you even begin to start talking about those things?
It's different if this is a one-on-one conversation than if I'm talking to a leader about how do I address my students or how do I address the youth in my church. But when I have students who come to me, I want to just first name that the longing is a good longing, that I would be far more concerned if you didn't have any longings. So let's at least put it out there that what you want is fundamentally good. Mm-hmm. And then can we talk about what are some of the healthy ways to meet in this period of time when you're not having sex? What are some healthy ways that you can be rich and full relationally? A conversation I have when I speak on college campuses is, can we talk about our need for touch? In American culture, we are so touch phobic. All touch is sexualized. So touch between boys and girls, or girls and girls, or boys and boys, it's all taboo, or else it's meant or understood to be sexual. So can we re-engage a very healthy view of touch, knowing that part of what we long for is just to be held and to be hugged and to be affirmed by skin-on-skin touch with someone. And that even that kind of freaks people out. How do we go here? I think the willingness to have a conversation about what's masturbation? Well, how can we have a complex conversation about that rather than just a very simple yes or no? Mm. How do we talk about pornography and separate that from conversations about masturbation? And so Yeah, I kind of sit down and say, well, what is it? What are the pathways that you're using to satisfy your sexuality? And are they life-affirming, and are they getting you into relationship, or are they further isolating and just making you feel guilty and bad?
Mm.
And kind of begin the discourse there.
That is a key question, isn't it? Whatever form of sexuality you're wanting to act out, is that actually moving you towards relationship or isolating you? That's actually really key, isn't it? Because when you think of pornography, even masturbation, other things like that, very much so, it's an isolationist kind of strategy.
Right.
Interesting. This is Open House. Lisa Graham McMinn is with us. Theopenhouse.net.au has the podcast. Sexuality and Holy Longing is our topic. Lisa, you have a little bit of a chat about maleness and femaleness in the book, and it's almost one of those areas where it's kind of wrapped up with so much political correctness red tape. You almost can't talk about, is there a difference between the genders? If so, what are those differences? Where do you even begin to talk about gender and gender differences?
Mm-hmm. I address this a little bit more thoroughly in Growing Strong Daughters. I come down on, yes, there are differences. God created males and females. We don't really dispute the physical differences. Whether or not some of the gender differences, boys are more this, girls are more that, is related to our physical nature or is socialized, seems to me to sometimes miss the point of how can we instead talk about empowering men and women to reflect the image of God in their relationships and the work they do in their sense of self. Let's not get so tied up in the debate on whether or not differences are biological. And can we look at how they either, again, further the way that men and women are able to function fully and confidently as men and women, or if it impedes that?
Do you think that a male and a female will in some way reflect the image of God in different ways, though?
Yes. Yeah, I do. And again, I don't know how much of it's biological and how much it's socialized. Women are the ones that have nurtured throughout history. They give birth, they nurse. It's not surprising to me to think that they will reflect God's image differently than the fathers who are standing by and wanting to protect and provide for their young. Women will stay with their children. You know, men will sometimes come and go. That loyalty that women have may be different. I think those pieces fundamentally are very connected to our biology. Mm. Now, whether or not that means men are aggressive and women are not, I think women are just aggressive differently. You watch a woman protecting her child, and she will get very aggressive doing so.
Mm, good point.
So we start taking the conversation and then throwing all kinds of generalizations and stereotypes that don't necessarily work. But I would say, yes, I want to look at how a father fathers and how a mother mothers and say they're reflecting something different of the image of God because of what it means biologically to be a mother or a father.
Yes. Well, I guess it comes down to those two words you used before, embedded and embodied, in the fact
exactly.
that part of it is cultural and part of it actually is our very makeup, our very DNA, our very build.
Yes.
Well, thanks for starting the conversation. I think there's plenty more to discuss from this point on. Lisa, thanks for joining us on Open House.
It's been great to be with you again.
Yeah, Lisa Graham McMinn there, author of Sexuality and Holy Longing through Josie Bass Publishers.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.